legal cases. There's a lot of confusion about who can talk to who. How
the
can they find each other?
The deadline for reuniting these kids with their parents
coming up in about a week
is next July. Is July 10th? That's
right.
In a few days for under 5 year old, and 2 weeks later, government not telling us what's happening.
Not telling us, and don't seem to have any plan.
And the end of that story of the USS St. Louis, the Jews turned back by the United States during World War II.
More than 200 of the Jews were killed in the Holocaust.
And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! To see our full coverage of the border, go to democracynow.org. Tomorrow, a special on July 4th. Hear the speech of Frederick Douglass.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Keys Beats Bars Community Discussion on Sunday, July 8th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. Keys Beats Bars is a music program for incarcerated youth. This community discussion will be about how music empowerment can bring the community together, and to learn about volunteer opportunities and general information about Keys Beats Bars, Morpheus Youth Project, Liberation Literary, and many others. Again, that's the Keys Beats Bars Community Discussion on Sunday, July 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Indigo Gardens, located in East Portland, providing fresh-cut floral design for weddings, events, and personal bouquets. Indigo Gardens also offers a weekly summer bouquet CSA. More information is available by phone at 503-421-1435 and online at indigogardenspdx.com.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris.
Yes, the number to call, and we're going to rely heavily upon you callers today, 503-231-8187. You can also write to us, if calling is not an option, at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or over the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Okay, there was a thing. There was a thing.
A thing?
In Portland this weekend, yes. Fascist versus anti-fascists in the streets.
What fun.
What fun. I was not there. You were not there.
That's true. Let's be clear about this. Normally, I go to these things because I love the entertainment of stupidity.
Really? Now you're going to go on the record with that.
Yeah, I'm sticking with that.
The entertainment of stupidity.
Yeah.
Were people beating on each other in the streets.
Yeah.
An altercation that, according to reports, grew violent enough that the police broke it up.
Yeah, and declared a riot.
And I'm not here endorsing the police as a good actor or even a neutral actor here, but apparently they did break up the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's appropriate for the police.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah. I'm merely implying that the Portland police have a less than stellar track record when it comes to these sorts of things.
Okay.
Okay.
No argument here.
Okay. The altercation was between a group called Patriot Prayer. They are a right-wing, pro-gun group.
Presumably Christian.
Presumably Christian. And really, they can be, I think, summed up by the... With the same militant nationalism that characterizes much of the pro-Trump movement right now.
I guess I would agree with that. I think that their origins lie much further back in our history, though. So we can talk about that.
Oh, it says right here that they were founded in 2016. That's not too far back in our history.
No, I don't mean the group by name, but the tradition of militant brown shirts or black shirts fighting in the streets in Europe and in the United States is pretty old.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So according to media reports, and again, neither Joe and I were there, so that's what we've got to go on this morning. I've talked to a couple people who were there, and they describe it much the way the media reports do. So apparently, Patriot Prayer, this is not the first time that they have scheduled a march in downtown Portland.
Well, first they had a rally in Terry Shrunk Plaza, which they had a permit for.
This is not the first time that they've gathered in downtown Portland, nor is it the first time that anti-fascist groups have shown up to oppose them, nor is this the first time that those clashes have turned violent.
Right.
According to media reports, the march, the activity, the fight, was broken up after members of Patriot Prayer started beating on anti-fascist counter-protesters with PVC pipe and wooden flagpoles.
That's serious.
That is pretty serious. I've also come across media reports that say that the anti-fascist protesters were not allowed to carry flagpoles. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I've seen the restriction on sticks of any sort during peace marches and things. So this is a common demand of the police.
All right. So what I would like to find out, what I would like to construct, actually, is a more complete picture of the situation based on, hopefully, phone calls from people who were there.
Yeah, I really think that's necessary. It's important.
I agree. I also want to put this question to the listenership. What exactly should we make of this? Is this the front line of a struggle between fascists and anti-fascists, freedom-loving Americans? Sure. I can't believe I just said that.
You did. You just said that.
Is this something that's necessary, or is this this foolishness that is hurting the anti-fascist cause?
Well, I don't know what you mean by necessary. I do want to do a little historical
okay.
stuff.
Well, first, let me tell you what I mean by necessary.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering, is the threat of a fascist takeover of our government and society such a clear and present danger that it necessitates these sort of violent conflicts in the streets?
Well, since it's already happened, I don't think it's necessary.
Impeccable logic. Impeccable.
Yes, of course.
So that's what I'm asking. Is this a good thing? Is this something we need? Or is this something, is this foolish? Does this discredit the anti-fascist cause?
Oh, that's a good question. I think worthy of discussion.
Right, agreed. And that's the part of the conversation I'd like to have today. Now, I'm not talking about showing up to counter-demonstrate. I think that's fine. What I'm talking about is the violence.
Right. And the tradition of that particular violence on the left generally begins, in my memory and in the reporting that I've looked through, with the anti-fascist movements, the Black Bloc, and so on, who arm up in terms of armor, literally armor, and who wear black and who cover their faces so as to be anonymous, they think. And they often are very, 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 very aggressive.
This is true. I see the phone lines are already lighting up. So why don't you quickly give us some historical
context? Well, just really fast. I don't want to spend a long time on this, but this is not a new thing in American history. And it's not a new thing in Western history. The way in which Hitler and the Nazis took power took place in all kinds of manipulations and all kinds of devices, including parliamentary ones. But the shock troops of the Nazi movement were the SA, or the brown shirts. And they actually were, in order for Hitler to get legitimacy and his power base to be centered, involved the night of the long knives, that is, killing off as many of the leaders of the brown shirts as they could. The street brawling was a very important part of the rise of the Nazis, to create chaos on the streets. By the way, this is a technique in a different context, which was used by the United States and Great Britain to discredit the legitimate government of Iran back in 1954. It's a common technique. Disorder requires order, and order requires suspension of rights and so on and so on. The street brawling was really something that could take place because the Nazi tactics included the occupation of and involvement with taverns and bars in cities like Berlin or Frankfurt, in which essentially you wouldn't want to walk in there. And certainly if you were Jewish, you wouldn't want to walk in there. And these were places where the plotting, the organizational skills, the desire to fight the communists and whomever else were developed and were thriving. And it was a social scene as well, and that's very important, a social scene as well as a political scene. And this went on for quite a long period of time and was extremely, ever more noticeably violent on the streets. In fact, street brawling was part of the draw for young people in the Nazi movement.
Nothing fires up the kids like a street brawl.
Nothing better.
No. I want to read from Willamette Week here, the quote from their article reporting on the conflict. After almost all of Patriot Prayer had cleared the area, this is the area around Terre Haute Plaza, where they had a permit, and as the initial commotion died down, U.S. Department of Homeland Security officers standing across the street and behind metal barricades shot pepper balls into the crowd of anti-fascist protesters.
Oh, really?
Yes, a spokesman for the agency said the protesters had been throwing objects at the agents and, quote, antagonizing, end quote, them.
So, what the hell is, wait, what is antagonizing?
I don't know, but I think that really tells you all you need to know about where federal police stand. Clearly, they stood with the fascists.
Well, so it would appear, let's not even say what their mindset was, it appears to be the case.
Well, they were shooting things at the anti-fascists and not at the fascists.
Good point.
All right, let's go to the phones. James, good morning.
So I think what we should make of this is understanding that our government, that our local government as well as our federal government, is actively complicit with, like you said, the fascists. You know, this is what happened at the last protest. The police got overwhelmed, so they accepted help from fascist paramilitary.
I'm not sure that's exactly true.
No, it's true. They had paramilitary supplementing their numbers. In fact, one of the local Republican politicians was actually calling for protection from those paramilitary groups. Anyway, point of the matter is that this is, you know, and I guess I'm kind of frustrated because I really see, you know, the only stupidity I see is in any of this is that we're actually trying to see both sides. You know, people are calling, oh, we need to have an understanding. We need to understand these other people. And, you know, at what point when the right wing denies its own humanity, do we start? I mean, that's really what my question is. Like, why do we need to see the humanity in those who perpetuate inhumanity?
Okay, I want to go on the record right now. I'm speaking for me here, not for Joe, not for the program, not for the station. It is not my position that we need to seek an understanding here. I'm firmly with the anti-fascists on this one. My hesitation about the situation, my worry about the situation, is the use of violence as a political tool.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, yes, the violence as a political tool, that's what they're doing. But then us anti-fascists are the ones who get condemned when we use violence.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's a disproportionate, you know, an asymmetrical response from the news media around these things.
And by the police.
And that's exactly my point. We need to stop acting like violence is anything new. This whole continent was settled on violence. The whole history of this country is perpetuated in violence. And then they talk about us when we don't use it, but they glorify it. You know, they glorify violence.
Who's the they in that sentence?
Huh?
Who's the they in that sentence? They glorify violence. Who do you mean?
White supremacists. Oh, white
okay.
Supremacists,
just wanted to be clear.
White supremacists, fascists.
All right.
Yeah,
you know,
I
that's
I'll stipulate to all that. I'll stipulate to all that, yes, but that's, I still don't believe that the anti-fascist movement is justified in using violence. I don't.
I don't. You know, I don't believe it. You know, if there was a way to not have violence, I would be all for it.
There is a way. There is a way. It's been demonstrated many times.
By who?
By all sorts of movements in this country, most notably the civil rights movement of the 1960s.
Yes, and every one of them still got killed.
No. Wait a minute.
I think we're done here.
Okay. I think there's a gross exaggeration there.
Yes.
I think that the strategies of nonviolence, particularly when you're apparently in the minority in a popular culture like the Southern segregationist culture, is absolutely necessary. If you use violence, you legitimize the use of violence by your enemies. And this is not just a philosophical question, which it is, but it's also a strategic question.
Yeah, precisely. The movement, the civil rights movement, would not have achieved the successes it did had it been a violent movement. Had it been a violent movement, it simply would have been snuffed out. And granted, the establishment did all it could to snuff it out anyway. But the moral center and the strength of that movement came from the fact that it was grounded in nonviolence.
Well, and I want to add another thing. The use of shock troops on the streets, the lumpen proletariat, as Marxists would call it, as the force to intimidate and control social democrats or liberals or even right-wing conservatives, the use of this violence delegitimizes government, creates the sense that, hey, there's no control, we need control. As soon as the idea exists that you need to control, limit freedoms, and so on, you're feeding into the ultimate plan of right wings everywhere.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. Linda, good morning. Linda,
morning. Let me get you off speaker.
Sure.
I want to disagree with a couple things, but the first thing I want to say is, you said you used the word asymmetrical attention of the press to the violence. And I just wanted to say, you know, I was looking forward to hearing about the other march, the big one, the over 5,000 people one that happened earlier in the day.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. It's very important.
And you guys went straight to the violence and your positions about it. And it's just, I'm not saying your topic is not a worthy topic. I'm just saying, gee, can't we talk about, we had a march that big, it's big news.
Yeah, certainly we can talk about
really
that.
Big news. So I'd like to hear more from people who were there.
Certainly.
And from you guys about not covering that yourselves.
Certainly
and
we
I'll
can
let you go.
We can thank you for the call. We can work that into the conversation, absolutely. The reason we decided to talk about the clash between Patriot Prayer and the anti-fascists is because we're a weekly show, and we devoted quite a bit of airtime recently to talking about the separation of children from their families at the border, which was the subject of the larger march that took all over the country earlier in the day. Yes, you're absolutely right. That is a noteworthy occasion, and we can certainly talk about that. But essentially, that's why we decided to talk about this clash, because we've talked about the other thing quite extensively.
Well,
up till now.
I would like to know more about the origins of and the money, the financing of the Patriot Prayer. Do you have any information on that, Abe?
I don't have a lot, no. But I'd be interested to find out more. If there's anybody out there who is a scholar of Patriot Prayer or even a member, we'd love to hear more about that argument.
Yeah, and I actually would like to hear some kind of a defense from them if they can make one.
If they can make one. All right, back to the phones. Jackson, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I'll make this quick. Can we specify types of violence, like states march of violence, the social justice violence, or vigilantism? Can we also talk about the difference between the Nazis? You're probably really good at this, Joe. The difference between how the Nazis came into existence and how Stalin came into existence through the Bolsheviks, and the type of violence these diametrically different, well, I don't want to say diametrically different, but they were both kind of like extremes of trying to help the people and do good for the people, but they ended up doing more harm been good.
Well, if you're talking about the political spectrum, they are diametrically different. I think that's an apt analogy, actually.
A lot of people talk about the brown shirts and the SA and the SS and Nazi, but no one talks about the Bolsheviks and Stalin. And how, to me, Antifa looks a great deal like the Bolsheviks.
Well, the reason...
I'll let Joe take the helm from here because he's a really good historian, and I like to understand his take on the Bolsheviks and their use of violence.
Well,
I'll take this off
the air. Thanks for the call.
I appreciate your honoring my alleged scholarship. I'm not sure I'm such an expert on this particular question. Here's what I know. The Soviet state, after the beginning with the revolution and after it, used violence and terror as ways of maintaining and extending power. There's no question about that. They defied any norms of democracy in the course of defeating the liberal democratic movements in Russia. The Social Democrats, when they gained power in 1917, failed to do the things that were necessary to end World War I on that front and failed to take care of feeding people and reducing and getting rid of, in fact, the army fighting a pointless war against Imperial Germany. Pointless because it didn't serve the interests of the working people at all. Now, Stalin proved to be, and this is really important to understand, a brilliant strategist and a ruthless man who put together a secret police organization of unparalleled, except for the Nazis, unparalleled skill. And that power, that aggressive perception of the role of a Soviet-style state and of so-called socialism, dominated the struggles in all the way into the Cold War. It doesn't mean that we were in any way blameless as a culture. It doesn't mean that there weren't good things being done within the Soviet Union to help the lives of ordinary people. What it does mean is there was no freedoms of the kind we value. If you spoke out against Stalin, or if you spoke out against this against the Communist Party, you could end up in a gulag or worse. So there was no democracy, and that loss of democracy, which accompanied the failure of the Social Democrats in the revolution to deal with the situation, is a classic example of what happens when there is no real cultural and literate notion of what democracy is. Remember that Russia came from a tradition where there were reform movements, but basically it was a imperial power. Basically, it was the head of it was the Tsar. That is, the Tsar comes from the word Caesar, by the way. Basically, that was a movement and an established order that dates back into the 16th century, I believe. So what we need, maybe even earlier, what we need to understand is that there was no tradition within Russia at the time of a long-term democratic society. Now, in contrast, we have, whether it's true or not, a mythic notion of democracy that has strengthened our society. Our Constitution speaks to that. There's a lot of support of that. However, it is also the case that during the crises of the Great Depression and our Depression, which is still being called a recession, I don't know why, our Great Depressions, plural, are events that create a crisis that would, in the classic sense, warrant political action in the streets. That's being exploited right now. I don't know Patriot Prayer. I don't know its true origins. I don't have a good history of it. That is probably my fault, but I don't think it's very visible in its origins. But we have a long history, and this is really important, of right-wing violence and denial by the government of that violence. Timothy McVeigh blowing up the center in Oklahoma. This was not an absent of leadership problem. This was not a lone killer. This was part of a vast, and I have to say this, a vast willingness to hurt people to gain a political position of essentially, I would call it Nazism or fascism of a very strong type. And often in this society, more so than in Germany, there is a linkage between Christian fundamentalism and this kind of movement. And this is a scary thing. And this is what really concerns me about when they say Patriot Prayer, who the hell knows what that means. But, you know, whatever your religious views, I don't think God takes sides.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that last statement. All right, let's go back to the phones. William, good morning.
Morning. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Bad. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so, I mean, I just wanted to say, here's my first question with this whole ordeal. I've been involved in the political scene here in Portland for about 10 years, and the city denies permits all of the time. So here's my question. why does the city continue, or the Fed, I guess they're getting it from the federal government, but allegedly, did they have one to march? I don't know, but they let them march on the streets of Portland with the support of the Portland police, who I witnessed driving down the road in the middle of their march after they had just moved out of the park and down the road, and they lined up abreast with guys with helmets, body armor, sticks, bats, batons, charged the anti-fascists, okay? They had a line, and they charged the anti-fascists, and there was people getting beaten. I saw people blood squirting out of their head all around me. And then they turn around, and the Portland police drive down the road, all in their riot gear, in the middle of their thing, protecting these guys. Okay, so like, we know the DHS opened fire on the counter protesters from their park, and there's video of Joey Gibson himself right before they started marching on his live stream, and he goes, we got a plan. Keep on going.
Wait a minute, who is this guy, Joey?
Joey Gibson's the founder of Patriot Party.
Oh, okay, thank you.
He goes, we got bait. We're getting them all arrested. And we know that he just met with DHS. Like, there's photos of this happening hours before. And like the other caller said, there is documented evidence at a protest months ago where one of these, militarized, like, dudes who comes out here from these 3% militias was doing a citizen's arrest on a counter protester and hand him over to the cops. So these guys are all in communication. I mean, look at what's happening at Occupy ICE right now. They're out there. The DHS is building a wall around their own thing using city property sidewalks to just stick out barricades, not to mention the fact that they had blocked a city of Portland road for almost a week straight. So, you know, so what's going on here? Is DHS and the cops, who's following the law? Who's following the rules? In my opinion, what's going on down there right now is that DHS is probably just throwing the things up saying, city of Portland, what are you going to do about it? And that's the whole thing, you know? We got the feds and DHS, and then the cops who are all—they're all in a similar mindset. These guys got guns, and the law is just a piece of paper until somebody sticks up and does something about it. So the question is: are we going to allow a far right, anti-immigrant, hate group march around the streets of Portland in the context of a situation where we're having children pulled from their families, put in cages, you know, and have hundreds of them march around our city? I mean, just the other day, Tiny, about a week ago, Tiny, who's one of the little Joey Gibson followers, and a whole crew of them drove down the streets of Portland and jumped out on a, this is all on Facebook and on some news reports, jumped out on an innocent guy and just beat him to death because...
beat him to death?
They didn't beat him to death, sorry. They beat him, up
okay,
bad.
Okay, that's an important distinction.
They beat him up bad. And he had to go to the hospital, and basically they were screaming, yeah, you know, make America great again, build the wall. And the guy was like, screw you. And they were driving down the road, and they jumped out and beat him up. So that they booked and released a bunch of those guys. Let them go. The guy who punched the guy in the head at the protest, who had to go to the hospital for a traumatic brain injury, they booked and released him. The police did.
Okay.
So the question is like, you know, it's a two-sided coin. There's all this stuff going on. Violence, nobody wants violence, you know? No one wants the escalation of it. We had a Max Strain Stabber guy who went to his protest and stabbed someone in the neck. So the question is, like, you know, for one, what is the city government going to continue to allow these guys and the federal government to march around? Because...
Okay, I hear your points, and I want to clarify some things. First of all, the First Amendment should and does allow individual groups or individuals to express their opinions, to gather in a group and support a particular position.
Peacefully.
Peacefully is the key. And even if they are fascists or whatever, they have that right, particularly if they apply for a permit. Now, it is also the case that four of these people have been singled out of the Patriot Prayer Group and arrested for their crimes of attacking people. And this is something maybe people don't know, but that did happen. The final thing to say is that, yeah, it's not fair. There is obviously a movement within the current government, the national government, to disallow or delegitimize all liberal and left concerns, including concerns over people ill-treated in the immigration process. This is real. These guys are exploiting that, the Patriot Prayer people. They put together the things that are very much part of the right wing in American history, that is a notion of Christianity, nothing to do with the teachings of Jesus, I might add, a notion of Christianity together with a notion of patriotism. And they are looking for trouble. Though that may be true, and it is true. The other problem is that we have developed a tradition over the last, I'd say, 10 years, I don't know for sure, of the Black Bloc, who also want to fight, who also want to come to grips with the system. The problem with that, apart from the moral question of nonviolence versus violence, is how the hell do you fight the establishment by being by breaking windows and by creating problems in the city itself? It doesn't seem like that's a good way to win friends and paralyze your enemies.
I would agree. It's, however, distasteful. The let me change my syntax around a little bit. Fascism, however distasteful, fascists have a right to march under the First Amendment peaceably. You know, a good question is, if a group applies for permits over and over again, and over and over again those peaceful demonstrations become violent, at what point does the city say no more, or can the city say no more? I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I don't know. If somebody is out there listening who knows the answer to that question, I'd be very interested to find out.
Well, it's a probable cause issue, really. Yep. I mean, if you have every time you have an event, violence ensues, and every time that you have that event and violence ensues, it's clear that you are the instigators of that violence, then there is really both civil and criminal remedies.
And to the caller's point, or caller's claim that nobody wants violence on either side, I think that's manifestly untrue. I think there are elements on both sides of the struggle who would welcome a fight. All right, coming up today on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio recorded at Reed College in 1995, Professor Howard Zinn talks about the book that changed the consciousness of a generation, A People's History of the United States. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Stage and Studio looks back on the life of legendary Portland writer Ursula K. Le Guin. And at 11:30, Art Focus welcomes Tyler Mackey to discuss her new show, Intimate Spaces, a retrospective body of sculpture and two-dimensional work that focuses on the lived female experience. All that and more coming up today on KBOO.
And I would mention that Zinn, to a much, 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 much larger audience at Portland State, gave essentially the same speech at the same period of time. I think it was the same time.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right. Who's next? Karen, good morning.
Good morning. This is a difficult and painful discussion, but it needs to be had. My heart goes out to the young man who was just on the phone. He's not the first person to grapple with violence versus nonviolence, and I fall on the side of the civil rights movement, the women's movement, and the simple, stark, and horrible reality is that some of us will die. And that we're up against forces that are so horrific, we cannot compete with them with violence. And in addition, the way that the civil rights movement gained so much ground in the women's movement as well was by being nonviolent, because we held the moral high ground. And although it sounds weak, oh, to this president, it's very weak. This is true strength. This is what strength is. It's the willingness to die in a way that is honorable and honors the great religious traditions, because they honor the human heart, the human spirit, and no one really wants to end up being a killer and carrying that around in them. I don't want to do that. I don't want to carry a killer around in me. I have one genetically, but I don't want to act it out. And so, okay, that's a part of it. Strategic limitations on violence. Moral limitations, spiritual, psychological. But there's something else I just wanted to touch on, although most of the time I agree with what you're saying, Joe. I didn't think Stalin was brilliant. I thought he was very obtuse and brutal. and something like 20 million peasants were killed under his regime.
That's true. No, that's absolutely true. I didn't mean...
And I think we have to say that because it's in... I'm going to try to link it to what's happening now. Both in the Soviet, former Soviet Union, and in China, tremendous numbers of people were killed, like 10 to 30 million in China during the Cultural Revolution. You know, 20 million in the Soviet Union, and that's why I don't want violence, is because the lessons of history are that when a state is not democratic, it's why I want democratic socialism, is when a state is not democratic, this horrible sociopathic kind of structure seems to emerge, and then that's what we have to live with. That's what the people have to live with. And so I beg the young people not to give in to this. I realize religion seems, the old religions must seem useless in some ways, but there are new ways to have spirituality and connect with the larger universe and connect with all people that are healthier maybe than some of the old religions were. And even within some of the old religions, there are emerging shoots of growth that are positive and that are progressive. So I just beg young people, don't give up into just go flailing around in violence, because it seems there's nothing else to do.
Well,
so that's what I have to say, and I thank you both for having this very hard discussion. Thank you.
And I want to thank you for your points. I think some things need to be recognized. First of all, H. Rapp Brown, when he was a leader of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and later turned out to be a person of notable violence advocacy, as opposed to Stokely Carmichael and others before Stokely, essentially argued that violence is as American as apple pie. And it's absolutely true. This country was, from its onset, murderous. It destroyed the cultures of and most of the peoples who lived here originally. It fought a war against Mexico with no real provocation, just so it could extend slavery and the Cotton Empire and gain more territory, including California. These are things that are part of our history, and most people in our culture don't really know about that. So we are historically in the tradition of violence. That's number one. Number two, there is not a lot of things that can be done to using violence to make a revolution in this society. In fact, if you look at what's happening right now, a fascist turn of events led by Donald Trump and his cohort is happening within the legitimacy of the system. So it becomes very problematic how one deals with
it.
Such as it is. Thank you. It becomes very problematic how you deal with it. I happen to believe that in the long run, or even in the short run, the techniques of democracy and of nonviolence are more effective and absolutely necessary to preserve any of the real values that exist within the culture.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. All right, George writes into the Facebook page to say, I support self-defense from the white nationalists and white supremacists associated with Joey Gibson and Patriot Prayer. Let's not forget Jeremy Christian was at Montevilla Park in 2017 at a Gibson Patriot Prayer rally before going on a killing spree on the Max Line. I was there, and I saw Jeremy doing Nazi salutes with the American flag around his shoulders. Let's also not forget that Joey Gibson is running for the U.S. Senate and has been doing these media events, staging to rally support for his political ambitions. It's very important to realize the operatives in play here.
No, I think he's right. I mean, I think this is a real thing. I think that the way in which we have seen historically truly fascist regimes like the Nazis or the Mussolini fascists, they really do use several techniques. And one of the techniques is at the level of ordinary working people to create violence, to create fear, and to limit the ability to move freely and democratically and to push whatever's left of the left into violence itself.
Yes, and also to create the realization, the belief among its supporters, I'll talk about the right here, that the stakes are so high that violence against fellow citizens is justified.
Right.
That their very culture, their very way of life is at stake. Which, of course, we know is hogwash.
Well, it's hogwash in the sense that, it is hogwash. Let's just leave it at that.
It is, yes. Aaron writes into the Facebook page to say, violence begets violence. Think about that. you guys are saying if Antifa use violence, they are retaliated against with violence. But it works both ways, if that makes any sense. Well, that absolutely makes sense. What we're saying is the anti-fascist movement would be better served by not resorting to violence.
Yeah, I can see the Black Bloc being being nonviolent and putting forward a notion of what they are doing and not as aggressive against the enemies of the people, i.e. the state and all of private enterprise, and working towards specific goals in a nonviolent way. But they don't choose to do that. They're in a very excited mindset. They see legitimately the rise of right-wing politics and fascism in America, and their reaction to that is to attempt to out-violence the violence. And that is really, really, it doesn't work.
No, it's doomed from the get-go.
Well, first of all, the state. I mean, I actually had an argument with some of the Black Bloc in the May Day riot of last year, which the police shut down on the excuse that the Black Bloc was throwing stuff and things. The fact of the matter is the argument I had basically was, look, you guys cannot defeat the police by weaponing up and masking up and so on. The police always will have more force than you will have, and they will not hesitate to use it, which we've seen over and over again. The response of the guy I was talking to was basically, shut up, old man. You know, we know what we're doing. Well, what they did, whether they intended it or not, was give an excuse to shut down a peaceful, family-oriented May Day march.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Bill, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to share that this is an interesting thing, because as an African-American man, looking at, I guess, from my understanding of what the civil rights movement accomplished, first, it really wasn't whether or not Malcolm X was the guy or Martin Luther King was the guy. I think Malcolm X scared the heck out of white America.
I think you're right.
And Martin Luther King was truly an alternative to this idea of what peace was. We'd rather deal with him than that crazy guy, Malcolm X.
Well, that's probably
but
true.
I want to share, though, this notion of morality and with respect to who's in power. If throughout conflicts, throughout history, I don't care which one we look at, when one side gains the high ground over another, they claim their morality as good for all. And I think if we spiral into violence to combat something that we do not like, I think we destroy the very foundation of what peace looks like. So
that's
I have to agree with you guys that peace truly is an important component, while understanding that this is about getting out and voting. This is about getting out and making sure that, I guess, we, the people who really want peace, learn to vet our politicians better, that we are more engaged on a level that we are constantly present. Because it's when we fall asleep at the wheel, it seems like that we spiral out of control. But I also want to simply share that one of the biggest gains of the civil rights movement was when middle white America stepped up and said no more. It just was not blacks marching that helped accomplish that thing that we talk about with the civil rights movement. It was an involvement of another block of the population that truly added, I guess, weight to the civil rights movement for black America, and that was middle white America.
Well, that's an interesting point, I thank you for your...
Yeah, that was an excellent call. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and I thank you for the comments. I think also that there are a couple of things going on right now. First of all, the thing that is leading both liberal and left at this moment in the creation of this weird fascist regime in Washington is a sense of despair. Here is a system where democracy was used to be thought of as the great hope of the world. However fantasy that was, it was a politically and morally legitimate position. That position is now in disrepair. Furthermore, the concept of moral action has virtually disappeared in the popular culture. So it ends up being, if you're a person, say, 19, 20 years old, and you want to fight the right, you are very much tempted to take to the street and fight. The historic truth of that in the development of the Ku Klux Klan in the 1920s, that's the second Klan, and the development of Nazism in Germany, is the truth of the effect of violence as a tool to legitimize state power in repressing everybody. So this is a very dangerous situation. And the strategy of nonviolence disallows the notion of disorder legitimizing state power to crush it. And I think that's just tactically, apart from the moral questions, and the moral questions are very real, that is a very bad situation.
Agreed. All right, Nick writes in to say, guys, I love your show, but I can't believe you're devoting it today to demonizing the Black Bloc. It comes across as so condescending and lame. Just stop, please. Nick, we're not demonizing the Black Bloc. We're just condemning the use of violence as a political tactic.
Yeah, I don't really see anything wrong with, per se, the Black Bloc. I see that their approach... And not all of them, but some attack storefronts or other people, whatever. That approach has no real place in democracy. And that's
agreed.
The problem.
Yeah.
Now, the notion of masking up and so on, I don't care. And that's okay, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, let me be very clear about who we're demonizing today. It's not the Black Bloc. It's not the anti-fascists. It is the people who wrap themselves in the flag, claim that God is on their side, who want to march us bravely back to the 18th century to a land when the United States was utterly dominated by white men. And other people had little or no political impact or no political lives to speak of. It's fascists that we're demonizing
today. And I would say that it really is. It's not just the 18th century or the 19th century, it's really the 20th century.
Sure.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that white supremacy is a dominant, in the back of a lot of people's minds, existing theoretical model today.
Yes, exactly. Well, white supremacy has been woven into the fabric of American culture since before the United States was founded.
Right.
And anybody who pretends different is deluding themselves. And further, anybody who pretends that that situation represents a fundamentally better way to organize our society is equally deluded. And if they mount a protest here in Portland or anywhere else, they deserve to be peaceably opposed by people like the anti-fascist movement.
Yeah, I don't think that the Antifa people are wrong to oppose them.
I agree. Yeah.
It's quite legitimate. I think when it all turns into an inevitably, perhaps, riot, and then that allows the police to pick and choose who they're going to arrest and
yep.
who they're going to thump. It's strategically a question. I actually believe that if the nonviolent people, not nonviolent, but if the Black Bloc and so on wanted a strategically significant victory, and though it might be very costly in blood, they're sitting down in opposition. They're being absolutely clearly pacifist and having the scene for every American of these right-wing, flag-bearing Christian, so-called, they're not really Christians, thumping the hell out of them, is a strategically clever idea. Please don't misunderstand. I don't think I have the courage to sit down in the street against a bunch of thugs from the right. But theoretically, that makes more sense than physically fighting them.
I agree. Engineer Ray asks the question, are Antifa and Black Bloc interchangeable terms? I don't know the answer to that. I suspect there's some overlap.
Yeah, I think they're interchangeable, but I'm not an expert. I'm not inside that world.
I'm not either.
And so I can't really answer that.
I can't either. Let's go back to the phones. Lou, good morning.
Morning. There's been a couple of scholars on KBU recently who detailed some of the history of Antifa and Black Bloc organizing. Joe, I'm not sure about you, but Joe may remember Mulligan Issarah.
Oh, yes, and, very well. And just so people know, he was an Ethiopian American who was murdered by the actual, real, honest-to-God Nazis here in Portland.
Yeah, they used to call themselves the White Aryan Resistance.
Right.
Yep. All right, continue.
And at the time, they were called East Side White Pride, the three guys that went to jail for killing him. And then there's Heather Heyer now in the last year at Charlottesville.
Right.
So in terms of strategy, which seems like kind of Joe's primary focus here, at Portland State, we had four long discussions at campus ministries about violence versus nonviolence. And this was back when anti-racist action was fighting against the neo-Nazis. And when we would have demonstrations in the streets and we'd be picketing different corporations, the people who are with ARA or Black Bloc would see the racist skinheads drive by and go chase them. So half our demonstration would leave. But when we debated this with maybe 100 people at Campus Ministries, we used an argument by Ward Churchill, who's written books against the FBI and COINTELPRO and used to be a teacher.
Uh-huh.
And I think people were fairly divided, which it sounds like your callers are, about what's the strategy in a given situation. If Trump is the enemy now, and Joey Gibson and the Christian Identity Movement, which is a precursor to Patriot Prayer, want to foment antagonisms in order to crack down further with Jeff Sessions, Joe's question may be a very legitimate question. Is that the best tactic? On the other hand, one of your previous callers talked about the Soviet Union. And I think Howard Zinn, having read Howard Zinn, would say that one of the important things to remember is that given the situation, like a world war, apparently as many as 30 million Russians died on the Eastern Front,
mm-hmm.
fighting and defeating Hitler and fighting and defeating the Nazis, because they did have opposite ideological points of view. And I don't know if you all have a number of how many Americans died in World War II. But
I don't have it right at hand, but
yeah,
there is a number.
Apparently, the Eastern Front for 3 years, Hitler thought he was going to conquer the world, and Stalin and the Russians stopped him, and the Russian people stopped him.
Well, and one of the strategies in that war, in World War II, was Churchill's notion that the ideal would be if Germany and Russia fought each other, and that would lead to a triumph of Great Britain and of the and America and the so-called West.
Right, and then there's the whole demonstration bombing critique by the left historians once the United States does Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It doesn't sound like, from what Joe's been saying, that you would disagree in a given situation, like the Soviets fighting and defeating Hitler, or perhaps the Sandinistas in Nicaragua overthrowing Somoza.
Well, these are situations that degenerate to the point where you actually have no choice. You have to take arms against the enemy.
And it also sounds like, given that you would, I don't know if it's fair to say that Washington and Jefferson were the Black Bloc of their time against George III, but it sounds like in the current situation, your argument primarily is it feeds into Trump's provoking things.
Well, I think you're making a lot of good points. I don't think, by the way, that Jefferson and so on, even though, by the way, they were essentially slave keepers and racists and so on, but liberals of their time, I don't think that that is analogous to any situation we're in today. I, you know, and I appreciate what you're saying. I think that the problem is that it's hard to grab a hold of a effective political struggle in this situation. By the way, I think the Occupy movement, which was tolerated and then not, and the current thing at the
700 protests nationwide on immigration.
Right, right, right. And the thing about the ICE thing, the whole of that, is clearly a model of fascism. And this administration, though not openly advocating violence, is in fact creating state violence against all kinds of people based more on their looks and their language than anything else. And that is just not tolerable.
And it also sounds like you think in what's left of a democracy, to sort of paraphrase Abe, that there's enough room, enough social space to either impeach Trump or to take the wind out of the sails of Joey Gallo for Senate, for example. That's all I wanted to call about. Thanks. Bye.
Hey,
yeah,
thanks.
Sure.
Appreciate the call.
I do want to respond a little bit. I think that the thing that is not quite grasped in America right now, particularly among millennials and so on, is that the only legitimate political tactic left is to make sure you show up and vote for the lesser of the two evils. You don't have a choice. You don't have a meaningful socialist party. You don't have a wide range of political opinion in American politics. We discovered that the Green Party had been infiltrated thoroughly by the Russians. Not their fault, but it was true. These are things that are now possible to do just on the web and so on. So we have to be very clear in our purposes. And most importantly, the first central thing is to organize and develop consciousness and to vote, even if you're voting for schmucko against wacko. Schmucko is bad. Wacko womb is meh.
This is the high quality discourse. That
yeah, I like to use these significant words.
Indeed.
You know.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Who's next? Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
one of the most important aspects of resistance is very simple but very important, and it takes bravery, is bearing witness.
True.
So people, you notice these folks, these black truck, black truck block, let's put it that way.
Who are you talking about there? It's not quite clear. Are you talking about the police?
They think they're the police. Now, I live in Clark County, just north, you know.
Well, I'm pretty sure they are the police.
They're a very small minority, but what I'm saying is they're very loud, and they're strutting around with their chest stuck out.
Well, I'm still not clear who we're talking about. Who are we talking about?
Oh, the Gibsons and the KKK up here in Clark County.
Okay, you're talking about the right-wing demonstrators. Okay. The fascists.
The demonstrators are out and about terrorizing people all day, every day, with their black trucks and their...
All right, okay. I got to touch you now. All right.
KKK. They're literally... look at the Southern Poverty Law Center website, and this is a hub for the KKK. Happened in the 80s with the skinheads. Mm-hmm. They just decided, oh, so there's some fertile ground there. Well, they're here, and they're sticking their chest out because of the Trumpism. We've got to bear witness. Everybody's got cameras. Everybody's got phones. Even if you got a little plastic disposable, start taking pictures of all these trucks and cars and that are clearly throwing out advertising their commitment to right-wing organizations and KKK and neo-Nazis. It's pretty clear if you're looking for it. So get online, Google it, and see what they look like, and then you'll see them around. And they're clearly out terrorizing folks. And with the 4th of July, you're going to see them even more. And they're flying their big flags, and it's just sickening. And the intimidation and violence, we need to bear witness. Send those pictures in digital form or mail or whatever to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Send them to whatever friendly agents are out there in the FBI and Homeland Security.
Well, let me. We have somebody who has a lot of more knowledge base. I really appreciate your call, and it's good to know, or bad to realize, that there are constant appearances by the fascists in Southern Washington. But let's go to our next caller.
Good morning.
Yeah, I guess that's me.
Yeah.
Yes. Can you identify yourself, please?
This is Brian.
Okay.
And I was just, I read something online just the other day that was a former rebellious person that didn't believe in voting, and they were now coming out and say, okay, you guys, and they were using very colorful language, but it's, you cannot say, you can't say that we are so blanked anymore. We can't do that. And that it was. I wish I had the particulars. I'll look for it. Maybe send it to you guys. But it was a really good argument for voting, even though it's like not hip. You got to vote.
Well, even though it's not, even though there isn't really a left wing party. I mean, you got to go with the thing that's better than the thing that is truly fascist, which is what's happened to the Republican Party.
Voting is a no brainer. People, it's like I can't believe we've had these arguments. But anyway. And then the other thing I wanted to say was the Antifa. I mean, I look around and there's so many sheeple on the right and the left that are afraid of any kind of conflict and not do anything. I got to say myself, I appreciate what the Antifa does. Somebody getting out there and putting themselves in the way. But the argument so far is kind of centered around them being aggressive. And I haven't talked to enough of them, but isn't there a chance that they are mostly saying, this is the line, we are going to draw a line? And that's kind of a different, maybe it's subtle, but it's kind of a difference. So anyway, I would like to talk to some of them and find out. Is like,
well,
is
it, I would like to hear from you once you've talked to them. I'm going to give someone else a chance. Who do we have?
All right.
Jeff Black.
Good morning, Jeff. What's on your mind? Hello.
Jeff.
Hey. So I was at Antifa Proud Boys all afternoon on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think the disturbing thing that needs to be called out is that the Portland police, DHS police, the riot police that were there keeping kind of two different opposing teams caged up, raging at each other for hours and then setting them free are really responsible for this riot. The Portland police set it up. It didn't take 30 seconds from the time that they released the Proud Boys down the street. And by the way, they did not give the Proud Boys a lead vehicle as they told them they would, feeling sorry for them at all, but they didn't. So as soon as the Proud Boys started crossing into the area, things started flying over my head both directions. Pepper bullets from the cops spraying down upon Antifa. So you know, had the Portland police, for example, taken this differently, not put their riot cops all over the street, there may have been some minor skirmishes. There probably would have been a lot of shouting. But really, I would say that the way that Portland handled it was what drove it to the conclusion that it had, which was a riot. And what we need to figure out is when these folks come to town, how is it that they're going to maintain their safety, and do the Portland police facilitate that?
Well, I think you're raising some interesting points. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. We don't have control of that.
Yep.
But I think your points are very valid. I do think that the Portland police have not worked out strategies that allow democracy and freedom of expression.
Well, clearly 1 hour was not enough time to hold this particular conversation.
Right.
But appreciate everybody who phoned in, who called to give witness, as one of our callers said.
Yes. No, yep. It was a good conversation. And next week we'll be talking about discrimination against people of color by the large stores in town, which will be pretty shocking.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your contributions. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host the class Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future at Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, July 7th and 4 p.m. at KBOO in Portland. This class will explore hip hop history locally and nationally, KBOO hip hop programming, how hip hop influences art, culture, and political consciousness, rhyme, writing, and production, and how liberation struggles have contributed to hip-hop culture. Again, that's Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future at Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, July 7th at 4 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage.